When parents are unable or unwilling to take proper care of their kids, the kids often end up in the foster care system, meaning the children end up raised, at least for a time, by people they are not related to and do not know. It can work out just fine. It can also be a disaster. Today's guest can speak to both outcomes. Ashley Rhodes Corder is the author of Three More Words. She was born to a teen mother in 1985 and spent years moving from foster home to foster home. She was finally adopted at age 12. She wrote an earlier book about her experiences called Three Little Words. Ashley speaks to groups about her experiences and is a child welfare advocate. She's married with three kids of her own, and she and her husband take in foster kids as well. Ashley Rhodes Corder, thanks so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Did you think you had said all you'd had to say in that first book?
Oh, well, no. Well, the first book, Three Little Words, is just about me growing up in the foster care system. So it just shares my story, and I tried to give readers an inside look of what it's like for a child growing up in the foster care system. And even though my story seems so crazy, it's really not the worst that I've ever heard, and it's definitely not uncommon. So even though I spent almost 10 years in foster care, had 14 different foster homes, moved around quite a bit, was horribly abused in some homes, sadly, that's so typical of what happens in the child welfare system. So when I was writing Three More Words, it answers all of the questions that people had from the first book, which finishes when I graduate high school. So, you know, what happened to that little girl once she found permanency? You know, the story didn't just stop. These things are always a work in progress, and I think people are so curious to see how my childhood experiences translated into my adulthood. So Three More Words just catches readers up to speed on everything I've been up to since. I'm now 29, and as you mentioned, I'm a mother. We have been foster parents. We have an adopted son. So it's really this sort of full circle journey that the two books will bring readers on.
I'm just staggered at the number, though. 14 different homes, and by my count, that was not even 10 full years in the system, was it?
I spent almost 10 years in the system. So, you know, I changed schools twice a year until the seventh grade. So it was a lot of bouncing around. Sometimes I was in one place for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, a couple of years. I think 2.5 years was the longest placement I ever had, and that was living at a group home from which I was adopted from. So aside from my now adoptive family, I really didn't have a lot of permanency or longstanding relationships in my life.
Why did you end up in the foster system in the first place?
Well, I was born to a single teen mother who had grown up in foster care herself, and so she didn't have a lot of educational resources, she didn't have any family support, and much like the cycle of abuse, she just got into trouble with people who didn't progress her life in a positive way, and she eventually got hooked onto drugs and, you know, just a variety of issues, and her life spiraled out of control, and she was just never really able to get it together. I think the official reason we came into foster care was that she and the man she was seeing at the time were writing bad checks. So that's when the initial arrest occurred. And since there was nowhere for us to go and they both had been arrested, my brother and I were placed into foster care. And from then, you know, she was just never really able to regain custody.
Interesting. You know, and I'll admit to some experiences of my own. I spent 9 years plus as a foster parent with my wife and spent a lot of that time with the two boys who left our home in their, well, as adults ultimately. So familiar with the foster care system, but interesting that you put it that way. It's not so much that it's being a bad mom or a bad dad that gets you into the foster care system, but there's usually a more proximate cause, like you get arrested for writing bad checks or something.
Right. Well, and so often, well, I think the first thing to realize for people who aren't familiar with child welfare is that no child enters foster care by fault of their own. These children are not juvenile delinquents. They're not committing crimes. These are just kids that are stuck in really unfortunate situations. And in a case like mine at the time, you know, my mother wasn't this hardcore drug addict. We weren't beaten. You know, it wasn't egregious abuse. It was, I think, a symptom of poverty, a symptom of no support systems. And so I think my mother would have actually been a candidate for some of these co-parenting initiatives they're doing now, where they're really trying to mentor and build up biological families. So I think maybe if my mother had been given even a fraction of the resources that were being paid to strangers who were abusing me, then, you know, perhaps she could have kept our small family together. But on the other side of the coin, now that I'm a foster parent, I think the pendulum in child welfare has swung much too far in the other direction. And now it's like we're almost giving parents too many choices and too many chances. And the bio parent rights are just, even with biological family, they're so they take so much precedent in court that it can really be deadly at times for kids, and they're not making decisions in the best interest of the child. So it's been really interesting to go from a situation where I was in care and they really didn't do anything to help families stay together, but now it's like they're doing too much, and because of these premature reunifications, because of not removing children at all in the first place, children are dying. And in Florida, where I'm from, there have been over 240 deaths reported to the Department of Children and Families this year, and many of them were under suspicious or preventable circumstances. And that's just a tragedy that people really need to be taking note of and question why this is happening.
The deference to the biological parents, is that why you ended up in the system for so long?
Well, there was a variety of reasons. I mean, they didn't do a very diligent search looking for relatives for me. And now that I'm an adult, I have access to a huge array of biological family members that no one ever even knew existed when I was in foster care. So I think they could have done a much better job of finding relatives or paying attention to other potential placements for us. And then we lingered in foster care for so long because no one was really ever able to make a decision swiftly. My parental rights weren't terminated until I was 9 years old. So I wasn't...
Your mother's parental rights, you mean?
Yes, my mother's parental rights. So I didn't even stand a chance until I was available for adoption. But that was almost, a decade later.
All right, so just to underscore, so you bumped along in foster homes because the state was waiting for your mother to get it together and didn't terminate her parental rights.
Exactly.
Wow. We'll pick up there on the other side of a break. Three More Words is the new book from Ashley Rhodes Corter, the follow-up to her earlier book, Three Little Words. We'll talk about what the words are when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange and talk more with Ashley and take your phone calls and emails as well. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about foster care through the eyes of somebody who spent a long time in the foster care system, nearly a decade in Florida's foster care system, for Ashley Rhodes Corter, who has now written a second memoir about her upbringing and what happened to her. She's ultimately successful in life, talking a lot about foster care and the many pitfalls she sees in the system. Her latest book is called Three More Words, the follow-up to the earlier Three Little Words. You can join us as we talk about foster care and its pluses and minuses. 800-838-3760 is the phone number anywhere in our region. 800-838-3760. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Ashley, how unusual is it for someone to be adopted at age 12, as you were?
I think it's very unusual. The older you get, the less chance you have to find an adoptive family. And I think a lot of people tend to think about adoption and they think about younger children, or they're afraid of adopting older children because they assume that we've got so many issues, or we're damaged, or it'll be too complicated, we can't fit into a family lifestyle, and people just aren't willing to deal with the potential baggage, or a variety of reasons. So in most agencies and most states, programs that initiate independent living services for children usually start at around 13. So at 13, I would have been eligible to start an independent living program, which would, the idea is that they start giving these kids skills to live on their own, how to get an apartment, how to write a check. The programs vary, of course, but the fact that they start kids with the mentality that they're going to age out of the foster care system and be alone at 13, I mean, that's really sad. So at 12, I thought I was way over the hill, and I never imagined that I would be able to be adopted at that kind of late stage in the game.
People would assume that the three little words of the first title, the first book title, are I love you, but no. What are the words, really?
Well, I don't want to spoil it, so I joke that the three little words are read the book. I gave away the words on a radio program once, and I got so much hate mail and backlash, so I learned my lesson not to do that. But they're definitely not the words that you think, and the three little words originated as an essay that I wrote for a writing contest trying to get scholarships for college, and I happened to win, and it was called Three Little Words, which talked about my adoption day and how it wasn't this rainbows and sunshine, happy, magical occasion. It was horrifying for me because I didn't believe in happily ever after. I had been let down so much in my life that I didn't think that this was an opportunity that was going to last forever. So I talk about what those three little words were and how I was afraid and how I had so many reservations. And from that, publishers contacted me interested in hearing my full story. So I started Three Little Words when I was still a teenager. And luckily, I had, you know, journaled and I had access to my case files, which was unusual because after you're adopted, your records get sealed. But because I was involved in a series of lawsuits as a teenager because of the egregious treatment we had in foster care, I had access to my case files because of the lawsuit. So I was able to use those files to recreate a lot of where I was and who I was with and what happened. And I went back and interviewed foster parents and biological parents, caseworkers, teachers, and it was kind of like writing a giant term paper. And I really wanted to put together all of these puzzle pieces that made up this big mystery that was my history.
I have to believe there might have been at least the possibility of something like post-traumatic stress disorder. And I wondered how much bad stuff you relived as you were reading the case files.
Oh, it was really difficult. And I think if I hadn't had the support of my adoptive parents, it would have been a much more, I can't even imagine what that would have been like. And even in my adulthood, again, I'm so thankful and lucky that I have an amazing husband and I'm still very close with my adopted parents. And I have a tremendous support system of friends and family that really help keep things in perspective and keep things in check. But the reality is some of the things that I experienced, I'll deal with the repercussions for the rest of my life in a variety of ways. So it's a constant struggle. But that was kind of another reason I wanted to write the second book, to show that there are people who can go through really traumatizing situations, but they can still come out on top and they can still give back and they can still contribute to creating solutions so that other people don't have to experience similar things. I've seen wonderful advocates for a variety of reasons take their own personal struggles and experiences and go on to create a lot of hope and inspiration for others going through a similar problem. So that's really what I was hoping to do.
Ashley Rhodes Corder is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the author of a second memoir called Three More Words about her life emerging from the foster care system into adoption. As you mentioned, not all sunshine and rainbows with the Corders, your adoptive family. It sounds like you did test them a lot.
Oh, there's an entire chapter in Three Little Words called Testing, Testing. And so I pushed every button these people had. And that's what was really challenging about our adoption, especially when you're adopting an older child. It's much more like a marriage. You're sort of blurring these two worlds together in a sophisticated way. And with them, I really had to get to a point where they could tell me every day how much they loved me, how much they cared about me, but they really had to prove it and show it. And so time and time again, I would do stupid, idiotic, typical teenage things and then some, and they would get frustrated or I would get in trouble, but they would say, you know, Ashley, we have nowhere to send our biological sons and you're no different. So you really messed up and you're in big trouble, but we're going to deal with this like a family. And so finally, it was this point where I was like, man, I can't get rid of these people. And it really, that's when I was able to finally start to heal and trust and learn to love other people and really learn to attach for the first time in my life.
Through all the years in foster homes, did you ever live with your biological mom?
Not in foster care, no. So the idea was that I would, you know.
But you never went back to her in that point.
No, I never went back to my parents.
Did you have some sort of dreamy idea about what it would be like if your mom would come pick you up and sunshines and rainbows there?
No, absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that adoptive families really struggle with. And foster kids, no one tells us anything. So we have no idea what's going on in our cases. So there was a period of 2.5 years where my mother didn't see me at all. And I didn't realize at the time that she had actually been arrested and was in jail during that period. So for me, growing up in foster care, especially since I was living in so many abusive situations, I held on to this fantasy that I was really, you know, a princess born into the wrong the wrong era or the wrong family, and that my mom was the only person that loved me and she was going to swoop in and save me. And these children, even though they come from sometimes really destructive, dysfunctional environments, that's all they know and that's what they yearn for. They crave those familiar settings and those familiar places. And when we were foster parents, you know, one thing they really train you is even if a child comes to you with a filthy blanket, like, do not wash it. You know, it's the smells. And even though you look at something and you're like, oh, God, this is so gross, well, it's what's so familiar to these kids. And they yearn for their families of origin. And so that was definitely something that I held on to for so long because it was this fantasy of what could be. And I didn't know the truth about any of the drugs or the arrest or the dysfunction. And so in my adult life, I kind of had to learn the hard way what my sort of family was all about. But I think all kids sort of hold on to these fantasies for a life that's better than the one that they're living, especially when they're in abusive situations.
So your biological mom, Lorraine, did come back into your life not long after you were adopted at age 12. How did that go, and how long did it take before you realized this is not the queen who's going to take me off to princess land again?
Well, it was many years, so it wasn't until I was kind of in the middle of my teenage years that I started asking more questions and wanting, you know, that there was always kind of these big question marks. So my adoptive family were always very supportive of me exploring my history and knowing where I came from. So initially we started writing letters, but I have to say that the first few interactions with my mother were very strained and very uncomfortable. And the first phone conversation we had together, I was a teenager, and I hadn't spoken to her since her parental rights had been taken at the age, you know, when I was 9. So the first thing she said to me, I'm kind of filling her in on what I'm up to and my family, and she said that I sounded like a stuck-up Valley girl. So that was kind of this huge slap in the face. And unfortunately, you know, I just learned that what I used to think was, oh, really spontaneous, and oh, it was actually mental illness or sobriety issues. And as I got into my adult years, she, you know, she's been struggling with addiction for her entire life. And so when she's sober, we're actually able to have a really decent relationship and conversation. But then when she slips, I get hurt so easily and so quickly by the things that she says and does. And I hate seeing that pattern also happen with a lot of the foster kids that we've had. And we see a lot of these biological families that just take advantage of the kids, or they use them for their subsidies or make them feel guilty, or, you know, it just, addiction is a really serious thing. And it sometimes takes a lifetime for someone to figure it out and really heal and get over all of those issues. But luckily, I have my adoptive family that's very drama-free. You know, we don't have a lot of those issues. So I get to sort of explore my history, but I always have this safe launching pad, which has been unbelievably amazing and why I am so grateful for my adoptive family. They've always been there when experiences with my biological family completely blow up in my face.
Ashley Rhodes Corder is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She spent nearly a decade in foster care before being adopted at age 12. Her memoir, her latest memoir, is called Three More Words, the follow-up to an earlier book called Three Little Words. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So you mentioned not spending a lot of time in any one school, but do you remember a moment when you decided to ride it out, to get an education, to be smart?
Yes, I just decided one day that I was going to be smart. I realized very, very quickly that school was a sanctuary, because when I went to school, I wasn't beaten and I didn't go hungry, and my teachers were so kind and so supportive. So I always loved school. And luckily, I wasn't born with any developmental delays or a cognitive disability. So I was able to catch on and be on task fairly easily, which was, you know, hugely fortunate. And I just realized that my education was something I was going to have for the rest of my life. It was something nobody could control, nobody could take away, and I got this sense of satisfaction when I would go back into foster homes and use bigger words than they understood. It was just kind of a defense mechanism of mine to have all of this information and be in this space that was safe and I could thrive in. So and as it turns out, it suits you well to do well in school. And so I got to go on to college, and I got a master's degree in social work. And I've really always seen the education system as a wonderful refuge for children. And that's not to say that all kids are going to be academically gifted. I also encourage young people to explore the arts or sports or some other kind of outlet. I think the academic world was sort of my outlet, but I also played sports and did a lot of physical activities. So it's really important that we're engaging kids in a variety of projects and talents and letting them find something that they're really passionate about, because it really can be a huge guiding light for them.
In the midst of doing well academically, though, I can imagine what might have been happening with you forming attachments with friends, especially when you're moving from school to school. How well or how awfully did that go?
Well, I didn't really form attachments, and that's kind of the problem. By the time I was adopted, I was just this very quiet, angry wall. Because everywhere I would go, sometimes I would show up and say, okay, I'm really going to try hard. I'm really going to engage myself. And then I'd have to move again. So most of the time I didn't even bother. I just kind of got in, got out. I really enjoyed meeting teachers, and I tended to bond to adults more so than my peer group, only because it almost wasn't worth it. They either didn't understand me, or I was tired of explaining why I looked different than the other kids, why I smelled different, why I showed up out of nowhere and then vanished. And I didn't have a lot in common with other kids because I didn't get a lot of just traditional rituals that other kids understood. I had experienced things that they couldn't even fathom. So it was sometimes really hard for me to connect with other young people. And they were also very critical and mean. And so I built up my walls and defense systems very quickly. So that made social interactions incredibly difficult, which I think is another reason people are so interested to see how I'm doing as an adult, because they worry that these children get permanently damaged and they're never able to have successful adult relationships, which fortunately, again, because of the healing that took place in my adoptive family, I have been able to sustain wonderful friendships and have a loving marriage. And I think a lot of that is because I was finally adopted and given that permanency that allows children to really thrive.
Ashley Rhodes Corder, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is Three More Words, about her life in the foster care system and a successful life afterward. Don and Ashland is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Was that me, Don?
Yes.
I'd like to, when you had all these experiences, a substantial number of negative, what was your... the involvement of the caseworkers, and what was your experience with caseworkers, and also did you have a CASA?
Casework and CASA. Good point. Thanks for that, Don.
Yeah, well, I had over 54 caseworkers, so I had a lot of caseworkers.
That's
that
six
were,
caseworkers a year, isn't it?
It was crazy, and so I think more frustrating is I had some caseworkers that were arrested on drug charges, others got in trouble for falsifying records. So I definitely did not have the best case managers dealing with my case. Fortunately, when I was about 7, I was appointed a CASA. In Florida here, they're called guardian ad litem. So this was a woman named Mary Miller, and it was because of my CASA that I eventually was freed for adoption. My CASA was the one that forced everyone to get the decisions moving much more quickly so that we could be freed for adoption. And I talk a lot about her in Three Little Words, and a lot of the speaking that I do around the country is for CASA groups, because this was a wonderful organization, and this volunteer really was the only person who believed me when I said I was being abused. She got me out of those abusive situations and ultimately helped find me the adoptive family that really transformed my life. So I give a lot of credit to CASAs and guardians, and that's another reason that I encourage people to step forward in such a role, because so few people, caseworkers, foster parents, they really don't have the child's best interests at heart, and they all have ulterior motives, or they are beholden to somebody else. So even if they're the most well-meaning caseworkers, they still can only do what their agencies require or what they're trained to do or what they sort of have to do for budgets or a variety of other reasons. But CASAs really get to speak on behalf of the children alone. They don't they don't have to listen to the bio parents or the caseworkers or the numbers or the budgets. It's really about what's for the child. And I say these things, and it sounds kind of doom and gloom, but I would love to remind listeners that I became a foster parent, so I've been able to live both sides of the system, and I know that there are amazing foster parents out there. There are incredible caseworkers. Unfortunately, it's been our experience that the really good volunteers, the really good parents, the really good professionals, they burn out so quickly. And
they give it a lot of themselves.
You know, very much so. And so they have all this, just all this transference, and they burn out. And so what's left are, unfortunately, the people who are in this for the wrong reasons, or the workers that just get complacent, or those who don't give it their all. So it's definitely frustrating, but I want to commend those who are working with children, because these issues are so important. And I've always felt like it's not enough to complain about something if you're not willing to be a part of the solution, which is why I've sort of committed my professional and personal life as an adult to these issues and helping to recruit better foster families, encouraging people to become CASAs and volunteers, and really taking an interest in their community and for these children.
The CASAs, the court-appointed special advocates, stay attached to the case as long as the child is in foster care, so they might be the person that the child actually knows through multiple foster homes. And so that, I guess, was the case with you and your guardian ad litem?
Yes, eventually.
All right. Much more to talk about with Ashley Rhodes Corder. She emerged from foster care and is living a good life. Her book is called Three More Words, the follow-up to the earlier Three Little Words. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Ashley and you in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you so much for listening. Our guest today is Ashley Rhodes Corder, who's giving us a bit of an education on the foster care system, certainly as conducted in the state of Florida, where she spent the better part of 10 years as a foster child, finally adopted at age 12. She's written two books about her situation. The first is called Three Little Words. The most recent one just out is called Three More Words. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Ashley's case specifically and the foster care system more generally. 800-838-3760, our phone number that works anywhere in the listening area, or join us by email at jx@jeffnet.org. We talked about your academic focus. You did graduate from high school on time then?
Oh, yeah. I graduated from high school with high honors and graduated to college with honors. I double majored in communications and theater with double minors in political science and psychology, and then I went on to get my master's degree in social work. So, again, school has just been a wonderful outlet and resource for me, and I would love to even pursue more degrees.
But I was about to say, what, no PhD?
Well, no, I would love to, but now I'm like, I have three children, three and under, so I'm
you're busy.
I'm up to my ears in potty training right now, so I don't think a PhD is in the cards at the second, but it's something I would love to do, and I'm constantly, you know, in my spare time cruising the internet looking at different master's programs or PhD programs. It's definitely something I would love to do. But right now, so much of my energy is focused on being a mom, and our youngest just turned 11 months, and we have a two-year-old as well as our three-year-old whom we adopted from foster care. So they're wonderful kids, and yeah, it's a little crazy, but I'm loving every minute of it.
You write in Three More Words about having some reservations about the transition from high school to college. What was the hang-up there?
Well, I think it's this horrifying transition for all kids going away to college. It's this whole new world, and I wasn't afraid of being independent, but in reality, you know, I almost wasn't ready to leave the nest. I had only just found my nest, so unlike my other friends that were just totally exasperated with their families and parents and ready to take off, for me, I wasn't entirely ready because I really hadn't had a family all that long. And it really was when I was in college that our relationship got so much stronger, because for the first time in my life, I always had somewhere to go. I had people in my life. When the school dorms closed down for holidays or summer, I had a home to go back to. I had parents to call. I eventually, you know, had a mother to hold my hand when I gave birth to our first biological son. And I have a dad who I can call when my roof is leaking and I don't know why. And, you know, I have a mom to call when I have a sauce that I can't thicken. It's just incredible. Now that I'm an adult, I feel like I need my family more than ever. But the initial transition to high school to college was really scary. But I wrote about some of that stuff because I think it's important for my readers who have kind of grown up with me. And Three More Words is also published with a young adult division of Simon & Schuster. So I wanted to incorporate stories that I felt young people could really relate to and talk about some of the mistakes and reservations and things that I experienced that hopefully will help them along on their journeys.
So you apparently acclimated pretty well to the freedom of college and did not really damage your reputation permanently from the sounds of it.
Well, no. I mean, I definitely made a lot of typical stupid mistakes. I'm not perfect by any means. And, you know, I definitely had, you know, I got busted with a fake ID and I was, you know, I drank with friends and did stupid things. But one story I share is that most importantly, and I think the generation now needs to understand how important not only your reputation is, but sort of your digital imprint. And how once something's on the internet, it's there for life. And so one Mother's Day, I was coming home to my family, which Mother's Day was super important to me. Again, I loved having someone to celebrate Mother's Day with. But someone had sent my mom an email saying, like, oh, you should see what your daughter's really like in college. And they really weren't bad. They were just stupid pictures. And my mom was like, Ashley, you know, all of this is very typical. You're not doing anything that a ton of us haven't done before. The only difference is it's on the internet. So that was really a huge wake-up call, especially going to a very small liberal arts college that I went to for my undergrad. You can't get away with anything. And I think it's just really important to always remember what you stand for and who you're representing and what you're trying to achieve and not have something as silly as a stupid photo on the internet tarnish everything that you've worked for. So I got to learn a lot of those lessons very quickly, and so I hope that other young people can learn from my mistakes. And again, there's nothing like Kardashian level on the internet. I don't want everyone to get, you know, Google crazy or anything, but it's just one of those life lessons that it's sort of embarrassing for me, but I felt like I had to share it because I know that a lot of other people can relate.
When in this process did you begin to do your public speaking about your experiences?
Well, I started speaking when I was a teenager, so I gave, in fact, I think my first really big keynote speech was for National CASA when I was 14 in Washington, D.C., and from the age of 13, I was working on documentaries with my parents and speaking out and really using my story to try to bring about change and bring about awareness, so I've been doing it since I was a teenager.
Let's take a couple of calls. We have Ann and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ashley Rhodes Cordry, the author of Three More Words.
Thank you. I was born to a bipolar single woman who, you know, couldn't take care of a child. And I lucked out because I had wonderful parents, grandparents who could take over those parental duties. One of the things that's happened in the last few months that your guest probably doesn't know about here in Oregon is that the Oregon legislature passed a bill that was signed by the governor that allows women to get oral contraceptives, a year's supply at a time, from their pharmacy without having to go to a doctor. And to me, this is the solution that allows women who aren't in a position to take on the responsibilities of motherhood to prevent them from ever being in that situation. So anyway, I'd like to hear the comment from your guest.
All right.
Thanks
for that, Ann. Appreciate it. Ashley, what if anything, do you say in your presentations about birth control and having wanted children, all of that aspect of things?
Well, I think that's obviously an issue that gets a lot of people riled up politically, but I have to say that I think it's absolutely important that we're imparting and giving access, you know, sex education access and birth control to these young children. I think it's completely irresponsible to take an abstinence-only approach or not consider the ramifications of what happens when these young women, by rape or poor choices or whatever the scenarios may be, when they're having these children, I think it's really critical that we're giving them access and preventing unwanted, unplanned pregnancies, because the ramifications really are too great. And then you end up with a lot of children who are abused and neglected in the foster care system or are abandoned altogether or are born into families that can't or won't provide for them, as children deserve to be cared for. So I'm definitely in favor of such laws and practices, and I think that education and prevention really is a critical piece of this puzzle, and everyone kind of runs around scratching their heads talking about what a broken system we had. But I think your caller had a point that if these pregnancies didn't happen in the first place, you know, then it's just, there's no overcrowding in foster homes. There's no child abuse because a mom snaps because she's not ready to deal with the kids. So, but also not all adoptions work out really well. So when you have children that are adopted, even in the most amazing of circumstances, sometimes those adoptees as adults have this lifelong hole in their hearts of loss and abandonment. So, you know, a lot of these good and bad scenarios could be prevented with the proper education and the proper access to health. So I think that's there's definitely something to be said for that.
I have not asked, and honestly don't know, even 100 pages into the book, have you ever had any contact with your biological father?
I have not. So we've yet to confirm who my biological father is.
Mm-hmm. All right, another call here from John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ashley Rhodes Corder.
Hi, thank you. Well, first of all, my nephew is adopted from Korea, and he's just wonderful, great guy. He's about 30 now. Just fantastic. And in Korea, the deal is if you're an unwed mom, whoa, baby. And so he got dropped on the street or something like that. But my real question is, how important is it for people like you to find, and you kind of already talked about this, your real parents? You see this on TV where there'll be a movie about, you know, finding. But anyway, that's my question. How important is that to people like you?
Thanks for that, John. And you did have a lot of exposure to your mom and your biological family through her.
I do. Well, I think it's critical. And we think about, you know, our son is very young, and even though he came from a pretty awful situation, I think it's critical that people have an idea of who they are and where they're from and who their families of origin are. I think that those are critical pieces of the puzzle, because it's very difficult to become a successful adult if you have no idea where you've come from. And those kinds of questions really do weigh on people in their adult lives. And so I think it's really important to have access to the information as much as a child is interested. So my family has always had this firm belief that no child can ever have too many people in their life who care about them. So as long as these relationships are positive, as long as all parties are willing and interested, I think these can be very productive relationships. At the same time, I've had a lot of access to my biological family, and some situations have worked out well, some situations have not worked out at all, and have been total disasters. But I can move forward in my adult life with no regrets, because I know what's happening. There's no longer that mystery that keeps me from other opportunities. I think when I was younger, the mystery and the intrigue and the fantasy of my biological mother really kept me from attaching to other people and even attaching to my adoptive parents for years and years and years. But now there is no mystery. I have the full story. I have the full picture. I have full access, and I'm able to very clearly know who my family is, who's really there for me, thick and thin, where I can trust, and where I can place safely my emotions and my children's lives. And so, without that information, adults are left with this constant unknown. So I think some access, or at least access to information, is generally very important.
Ashley, how would you rate your capacity for forgiveness, and not just for biological parents, but foster parents and bad caseworkers and people who run the system? It seems like it's profound, but not limitless either.
Well, I've really been struggling with a lot of this. My instinct is to say that I'm a very forgiving person, mostly because I understand. Even some of my abusive foster parents, once I got to see my licensing files, you know, foster parent notes, and you know, they all came from abusive marriages or dysfunctional relationships. So I can understand how these things happen, especially looking at it from a social worker's perspective and the families that I work with. And you see how this cycle of abuse repeats itself. So that's really allowed me to kind of forgive and understand how these things happen. However, some things I both fear and feel are totally unforgivable. Like in February of this year, one of our former foster children was returned to relatives that she had been removed from, and she was murdered by a mentally ill uncle living in the home. Her name was Jenica Randazzo. And to me, this was completely unforgivable because there had been over a year of professionals fighting against this placement. And perhaps because of bureaucracy, because of numbers, because of money, who knows, they forced this child back into this hideously dangerous situation, and it cost a beautiful 9-year-old girl her life. So that was my worst fear as a foster parent coming true. And so that happened this year. So I'm constantly torn between the role that I play and the things that I experience as a foster parent and what I'm seeing as a professional. And as a professional, I'm so lucky that I'm exposed to the most progressive practices, incredible people, unbelievably dedicated workers and parents and professionals. But then as foster parents, we were treated so poorly. We had a child that died. We had another toddler who came to us with multiple STDs, and she was returned to the biological mother, who admitted in a staffing that she knew her infant daughter was being raped, but she didn't think it was a big deal. And so I'm left as a parent, like, how are they making these decisions? What is going on? What is going wrong? And why aren't people listening? So it's just constantly battling these two hats and these two struggles. But the key at the end of the day is that one voice, that one caring individual, the judges that are really making best interests for the kids, the workers that are presenting evidence that will help keep these children safe. Because, you know, as was the case with our little girl, these can be life or death situations.
So a lot of people working on it for sure, but definitely some changes desired by you and a lot of people. The book is called Three More Words, the follow-up to Three Little Words, memoirs from Ashley Rhodes Corder, who spent a decade in the foster care system in Florida and is now a foster parent herself and quite successful. Ashley, thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. And that'll do it for today's Exchange.